Now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slam of pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really couldn't devour him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change lane. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up. It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam show.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. It is the Pancakes and Power Slam show. I am your host, Chris Featherstone. This is Crave Wrestling, hosted along always with Ryan Fuqua.
Yeah, and two things today. I promise that we will be a little more money than Money in the Bank was, so the bar isn't set real high for today, I guess. And two, I promise that John Cena, just like, what is it, 7 out of the 7 pay-per-views, will sign off this show as going out on top main event.
Well, we shall see. I'm sure there's all the listeners will be paying attention and seeing if we mention John Cena lastly on this show. So thank you so much, everybody, for listening. As always, every week, for those who are new to listening to us, we promise to deliver you a good show as we attempt our best to do every week. And we would love your interaction. Money in the Bank aftermath. The number to call in is 347-884-8452 if you would like to share your thoughts on air. And if you want to get on the chat room, go ahead and log in the chat room as we do every week. If there are comments on the chat room that are deemed worthy to be said live on air, we will say them. So, of course, we got Money in the Bank and Raw, SmackDown, Impact Wrestling, and time permitting, ROH. And also we have our Flavor of the Week topic this week, which is on the brink of the 1,000th Raw episode coming up next week. We will chat about some memorable Raw moments. So let's start off with Money in the Bank. Pre-show, we saw Kofi and R-Truth defeat Hunico and Camacho. Decent match, just like I wrote on my article, just a match-by-match analysis of Money in the Bank. Decent match. It definitely was a good showcase of the tag team division. But still, though, don't really understand why this was a pre-show match and it wasn't even for the tag team titles. Now, I'm sure the primetime players would, at that point in time, would argue why. But from what it's worth, at that time, the primetime players did not want to accept the tag team title match because it was on the pre-show, and AW tweeted about how we thought it was the primetime players are too good for their pre-show. But as we saw throughout the as we saw later on in the show, as well as Raw, as well as singles matches throughout the week, they're on a bit of a losing streak. So I wonder if they will receive the push that they have been getting over the past couple of months, or just like a lot of other things, WWE decided to put a halt on it.
Yeah, this was just a lame attempt at a pre-show gig. Probably one of the worst for me just because of the situation, you know. But I guess the only thing here, man, I don't know, are Primo and Epico, like, are they teetering on the heel face line? I don't really not sure what they are right now. I would prefer them to be face, I guess, but not really sure what they are as of this moment.
Yeah, I'd never. It was something I was thinking about too over the past few weeks. Are they official tweeners, or are they official baby faces? And then, like, they never really made the turn per se. They just have some beef with the primetime players, and they haven't really went against anybody else to show, you know, what side they lie on. So that's a good point there. Then we saw the World Heavyweight Championship Money in the Bank match. Good match. To me, it was definitely the match of the night. Good action by everybody, surprisingly. Even Mr. Hissman himself, Tensai, he didn't he wasn't a flop on the match. And Sin Cara, where I was watching it, someone made a comment next to me that they were mentioning how and we both were actually thinking about the same thing. We mentioned around the same time about it may be an annual thing now when Sin Cara gets power bombed on a ladder. So as we saw last year, he kind of bounced on the ladder this year. Last year he went through the ladder as Sheamus power bombed him. But at the end of the night, Dolph Ziggler won the match, which is well deserved. I'm very happy that he won the match, and hopefully he isn't the victim of the first loss. And Cody Rhodes, that was my pick. He seemed like he might have had it, but he made one comment. I don't remember the comment verbatim, but at the same time, it was like he was saying whatever comment he made towards the end of the match, he was commenting, he was yelling at somebody about, you know, it being his time to get the briefcase. And I said, oh yeah, that was basically his demise, because he basically sealed his own fate of not winning. And I was right. Ziggler ended up winning at the end. So kudos to Dolph Ziggler, and we'll see where this goes from here.
Yeah, Cody, I believe, was my pick too. Just Cody was me picking with my brain, and Dolph would have been me picking with my heart. But I don't know. Like I said before, I wasn't so sure about Dolph winning it, but after him winning and seeing him come out with it, and we'll get to that, of course, it kind of changed my mind. So I'm okay with that, but just hopefully now Dolph never looks back in his career ever again. I mean, it should just be, he should be zooming to the, well, I don't want to say finish line, but just to the top, skyrocket, man. It's, I don't know, the limit is the sky. So, and then another thing too about this match, I thought for a quick second there, man, they had me convinced that they might have pulled one of those stunts where Sandow was going to win, because I don't know if you noticed, he went MIA near the end of the match. Like, there was a long exchange of the superstars battling, and I was like, man, where's Sandow? So usually that person is the one who scurries up the ladder and wins the match, but not this time. I didn't even see him again after that, so it was weird.
Yeah, good call on that. Before we go to the next segment of Money in the Bank, we will do our weekly This Week's News and Last Week's Errors. This Week's News, Finlay returns to the WWE as a backstage agent. Karma's WWE release, still uncertain. She's not taking any future bookings, although there has been talks about her being released from the WWE. She's still doing a couple things, like she's on an alumni page, and there's still a couple things that's kind of hinting maybe a return soon. ECW trademarked by an LLC in New York. The WWE kind of slipped up on renewing their trademark, and just a random LLC in New York seized that opportunity and trademarked ECW. So we'll see where that goes. And then Brie Bella, she tweets about the Daniel Bryan and AJ wedding, as we saw and we'll talk about coming here on Raw. For people who don't know, Brie Bella actually dates Daniel Bryan in real life. and she made a comment on Twitter. Basically, the comment said, quote, maybe Nicole and I should crash AJ and Brian's wedding, but wait, he's in my bed every night. Ha ha. So pretty interesting tweet there. But as we saw, I mean, more towards the end of their career, they definitely weren't as important as they were at another point in time. And then lastly, Austin Aries signs a long-term deal with TNA. It was pretty much a given based on his just skyrocketing as a star in TNA. And then last week's Aries, we just made one. Wasn't really an error. I think mentioned the times that The Rock was WWE champion, and the number is officially 7. He's a 7-time WWE champion. And a little sidebar about The Rock. Since 1999, he's been in 22 movies.
Wow.
So it doesn't seem like he's been in that many. Of course, that's counting cameo appearances and just short moments in different movies, but 22 to be exact. So we're going here further in Money in the Bank. Like I said, feel free to give us a call if you have your Money in the Bank thoughts. I'm sure there's a lot of them, and we'll accept calls if applicable. 347-884-8452 is the number. Feel free to log in into the chat room and flood the chat room with some comments, and we'll go ahead and comment on the ones that are deemed worthy to be said on air. Then we have The Miz announcing he made a return. He announces that he'll be in the Money in the Bank match for the WWE title to make it 5 people instead of 4. Although I'm not a big fan of The Miz these days, I think it was definitely a good idea to break up the rigidness of the 4-man Money in the Bank. I didn't think it was a good idea in any ways. But at the same time, at least Miz created a buffer as far as the match is concerned to make it 5 people. So I was a big fan of that. His look is a bit odd to me, and he's selling a whole movie star gimmick, but I don't know, he kind of looked like a scruffy maitre d' or something like that, and I wasn't too big of a fan of it, but apparently they're starting to be high on The Miz again, and they may continue to push. They're allegedly continuing to push for him vying for the WWE title. That doesn't mean that he'll win it, but at the same time, they're possibly resurging The Miz's push. I don't know. It might be a lost cause to me, so we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I like the new look. Just needed anything different. It works for me. Definitely needed him in that match, yes. I don't know if they're going to keep him heel. I would move him to SmackDown. I mean, either show is, we always talk about how it's overran with heels, but I mean, if you want to go face, leave him on Raw, but they just give me more different with Miz. That's why I said I appreciate the new hairdo and facial hair, because it's just something different, so that's good.
Bit scruffy for me, but I can see your point. I can see the logic in your point there. Sheamus defeats Alberto Del Rio. He proves Alberto Del Rio, to me, should not be a main eventer at this time. The match was definitely lackluster to me. And the thing is I can't blame Sheamus on this one. It's not saying that I blame Sheamus, you know, for bad matches involving him on the regular, but even if someone could have a case of this match being bad because of both of them, I can't say that. Sheamus is a good wrestler, and he really proved to me, as we talk about on SmackDown, even you know, his opponent on SmackDown tweeted about it. We'll get to that, but he can put on some good matches. And Alberto Del Rio just he doesn't cut it for me. We've made mention many times in the previous shows that he should stay more of an upper mid carder type role, possibly Intercontinental Champion or U.S. Champion, or at least vying for either one of those titles. But World Heavyweight Championship or WWE Championship, I even mentioned during the pay-per-view that both of his WWE Championship runs were very forgettable. I mean, the thing is, he cashed in the Money in the Bank briefcase on Punk after Nash powerbombed him, and a lot of times that even is forgettable in my mind. That slips my mind a lot, and so for that to slip my mind, I can, out of the 12 now Money in the Bank wins from throughout the year since 2005, I can tell you all 12, you know, Money in the Bank cash-ins, but I would say the Alberto Del Rio's cash-in was probably one of the weakest ones that we've seen. And speaking of cash-in, Ziggler post-match, Alberto Del Rio beats up on Sheamus, and Ziggler teases cash-in in the Money in the Bank. I saw it. You know, I was at the edge of my seat, and I said, oh, no, I really hope Dolph Ziggler isn't the victim of the cash-in to lose, because I saw Sheamus at the corner, and it was just bro kick written all over the situation, and I'm glad that they didn't go further with it, and they just kind of, said bro kick, and Sheamus keeps his title, and Ziggler keeps his briefcase, so it was definitely a scare to me.
Yeah, and Sheamus was selling it kind of during the match, or either just was really out of breath or something, because I don't know if anyone out there noticed, but I know I did, that Sheamus, I mean, he looked like he was, you know, just dogging it and out of breath during the match and tired. So don't know if he really was, or if that was kind of a sale for the whole Ziggler and the Money in the Bank thing, but definitely noticed that. Man, this match is just, like you said, taking nothing away from Sheamus, but boring. Boring. I mean, I would have probably tried to start a chant if I was there. I mean, it's that bad. So I'm officially done with Alberto Del Rio, man. I don't know. Like I said, it's maybe U.S. and IC level, I'm fine, like we say, but I'm officially done for him in the main event type of spots. And if it wasn't for him, Punk would probably have been the champ for the entire year, from Money in the Bank to Money in the Bank. So that's pretty crazy to think about, especially how Del Rio didn't deserve the title then, nor does he deserve a world title now. So I could rant on him all night, man, but I'm just, it's the music and it's Ricardo Rodriguez. It's not actually Del Rio himself. It's what people like, I guarantee.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. And it's like they're trying, they're doing their best, and I'll say this. I think that if and possibly when Alberto Del Rio gets released from, you know, the WWE, I can, for once, you know, because we've mentioned Chris Masters before and a couple of other wrestlers, as far as you know, releasing them too soon. But I could say, I can sit here and say that I would believe that if Del Rio was released, the WWE did what they can to make him a star. And I mean, they made him the winner of the 40-man battle royal the same year he won the Money in the Bank. The same year he won the WWE title twice. And so, you know, if he gets released, I would definitely say, you know, it's because of just him not, you know, not cutting it as far as being a star is concerned.
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. That's very agreeable. I don't know what it is about him, but I don't know. Not like it's Jack Swagger type of deal where you're like, man, we know they're not using him right, you know. So.
Right.
But even then, they're not throwing Swagger World Heavyweight Championship matches at what seems like every third pay-per-view.
Yeah. Then we saw Primo and Epico defeat the Primetime Players. Little confusing to me. Don't understand why. I don't know, maybe because I'm favoring the Primetime Players so much. They got something going, but it seems like AW is a kryptonite now because they were winning matches before AW. I don't know if this is playing to another angle for AW to go somewhere else with another, you know, team. Who knows? They may even go on the limb and do something crazy, like have him manage Kofi and Truth and have them turn heel or something. It wouldn't go past me. But at the same time, it's like, you know, they're on a losing streak. They lost some singles matches on the weekly television shows. I believe it was either Raw or SmackDown, but I know they lost. I think Epico beat Titus O'Neil, if I'm not mistaken, on Superstars. And Epico also beat Darren Young, I believe it was a Raw, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, I mean, and then they lose here, and, you know, they're the number one contenders, but they lose on a pay-per-view, so that didn't make much sense to me at all.
Hmm. Yeah, I thought I liked Primetime Players. I thought I liked them. I don't know if I was just on a honeymoon with their debut or whatever it was, but I'm not a fan of this tag team anymore. It's lame to me. I don't know. I don't know what happened. Like, they don't have it. I don't know. And I like AW. I like his character. And even them putting him with those two, like, it just doesn't, I don't know. I don't like the music anymore. I don't like the dances. I hate Darren Young's pro. Oh, I don't. I just don't like it anymore. I'm not a fan. I think Titus O'Neil is just stiff as a board. Like, I don't know what happened. Like, if anybody goes back and listens to our archive shows, I'm sure you will hear me say some type of praise about Primetime Players. But now it's gone. It's out the window. I don't know what happened. I turned on them quick.
That's tough. That's tough for me because I'm holding on. I'm holding on. I don't know what I see in them, but I'm holding on to what I think may be a good deal with the Primetime Players. But we'll see where that goes. One thing I will agree with you 100% is that, I've even mentioned it, Darren Young's fro has got to go. And I didn't mean to rhyme, but I think the very fact that I rhymed meant something. It really solidified it even more. So, and then we saw CM Punk defeat Daniel Bryan. To me, the match wasn't as good as expected. It was too gimmicky, and mixed reviews that I've seen throughout the few days in the match. The action delivered, you know, of course, it's CM Punk and Daniel Bryan. You know, of course, that pretty much says it right there, just on paper alone. And they delivered. They did what they did. But at the same time, I mean, I don't know. It wasn't as suspenseful to me for AJ. It wasn't like who she's going to turn on. It was just like she's preventing, you know, the whole chair thing with Punk and the kendo stick with Daniel Bryan, and it just really didn't do much for me. I think that you know, we coined a Twitter hashtag concerning the Undertaker and Triple H match at WrestleMania 28, and that's hashtag pure. And I think it applies to this match too. I think this match was probably the last match of the series, at least for a while, and it had to be hashtag pure for the most part. We kind of saw that, you know, but at the same time, I think AJ was a bit too involved and it was a bit too gimmicky to me.
Yeah, what a letdown. I mean, overall, this pay-per-view was awful to me, as I stated at the beginning of the show. But this match, man, I guess we couldn't get too many, you know, good matches for too long between these guys. But, and not saying taking nothing away from them, it's just, I guess it's the way it was written up. I don't know. It was a letdown to me. Like, the ending was definitely whack to me. No shock value after all this, the however many months of build-up, there was no real shock value. I'm glad it's moved along. We'll talk about that when we get to Raw. Seems like they're just going to move along from the storyline that's over. Now it's between, you know, Brian and AJ now. But, I mean, I'm glad they moved on, but for it to have come to a head at this, which it seems like it, that's what's happened, that was a little bit of a letdown.
Yep, I would definitely say the same. If anybody have any Money in the Bank thoughts, feel free to call in 347-884-8452 if you want to be live on air. We will answer calls if applicable and based on the time that we have. But still feel free to call in. We can insert a call at any given moment if you want to be if you want to voice your opinions on Money in the Bank live on air. We'll you'll have the opportunity to do it, as well as logging in on chat room and voicing your opinions there. Speaking of letdowns with the pay-per-view, we saw two matches that kind of sandwiched the WWE Championship match and the Money in the Bank briefcase, I wrote an article about the Money in the Bank briefcase. It continues a particular streak, which we kind of mentioned it a little bit earlier in the show, but we'll get to that. Match after the WWE Championship match, a couple buffers. The first one was Ryback defeating Hawkins and Rex. I'm sure that you weren't happy about that, especially it being a handicap match. But the crowd wasn't in this match at all. I mean, it was one good thing I will say is that there was at least some type of build to this match with Ryback throughout the week. The competing in two singles matches with Hawkins and Rex, and we'll get to my opinion on Tyler Rex when we get to the SmackDown recap. But there was a bit of a build to this, and so although I wasn't a fan of the match and the crowd wasn't into it at all, I will give them the fact that there was some kind of build. But you know, this match, just like everybody else, just like all the other matches, Ryback is just going down the tubes for me.
I agree with you. Quick, seemed like a quick, short, mini feud, little warm up or something. I don't know, but it was okay for me, I guess, just being, you know, made up with what, like a week or two in advance. He had, like we said, this and then the SmackDown match prior to Money in the Bank. These were his two longest matches, so at least they put a little bit of length on there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, then we saw, to me, the worst match of the night. Layla, Tamina Snuka, and Caitlyn defeating Beth Phoenix, Natalya, and Eve. Now, I mean, you talk about your useless buffer matches. Now, I understand that, you know, I understand the art of booking, you know, pay-per-views, and you got to throw in a buffer match, you know, to sandwich between, you know, two potential show stealers, you know, just to kind of diffuse the, you know, the energy a little bit to kind of, you know, resurge it at, you know, at the end or the next match. I understand that. Ryback being a buffer match, he's been a buffer match for the past few months. I understand that. You know, I wasn't too opposed to it. I was actually expecting it. Now, this six diva tag match was just ridiculously awful to me. This shows, with the exception of Alicia Fox, I believe, was really the only person that's that wrestles often. You can maybe throw AJ in there, but other than Alicia Fox, this is the divas that the WWE is presenting to us. Namely, these six people, and you can see why Karma doesn't fit in any of this right now. And Layla is the champion, and she's involved in the six diva match. Now, it wouldn't have made sense to me if the six diva match was some type of six-way or something of that nature. You know, and not saying that, I mean, not saying that, you know, this would enhance anything, but the creative team should be a bit more creative. Why not? Why couldn't this be a Money in the Bank match with all the, with five divas and Alicia Fox would have made six. So you had six divas, Money in the Bank match. Layla could have been commentating. It would have put, it would enhance some type of, you know, intrigue in the divas division. But instead you get some ridiculous, you know, filler match that was just awful to me.
Yeah, I'll keep saying it too. Don't be afraid to make a championship scramble for the divas. I don't understand that. You know, just give them 5 good minutes. You know, I mean, that's what they usually give them anyway. So that's enough time. And like you said, there's six of them out there. But yeah, the Money in the Bank idea for them. They, of course, they wouldn't use a ladder because of their ratings or whatnot. But that would have definitely worked for sure, you know, just some type of divas, a pink briefcase. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Yeah, it was
quick,
just awful.
I think from what I heard, it sounded like Beth Phoenix got the most pops during the intro, so that was random that the heel Phoenix got the most pops. And then Layla messed up at the end there when Tamina super kicked Beth Phoenix. Beth Phoenix kind of laid back to take the neck breaker, but then she felt that she wasn't there, so she had to kind of turn all the way around. And yeah, it was sloppy. Just put it like that.
That's the Divas division for you, unfortunately. So. Speaking of sloppy, we saw a sloppy ending to the Raw Money in the Bank match. And, of course, as the hype confirmed, John Cena wins. And to me, this was, as you were just saying, you know, just this didn't live up to the hype. This was a bit subpar to me. Of course, there were some interesting spots and everything, but, you know... to me, I think that Chris Jericho was just the MVP of this match. He really did some great selling, and I'm not saying that just because Jericho is my favorite wrestler. I'm saying that from a rational standpoint. Even The Miz, you know, did a couple of good stuff, good things, but Jericho really did an amazing job in this match. And just the ending with Big Show's up there, and then Cena grabs the case, and then it just comes off the handle, and it was just unexpected, and then still John Cena hits Big Show with the case after the bell rings and kind of made a, you know, an oopsie type of face and was commenting, you know, just looked real cheesy. It was disgusting to me. I just didn't like it, and I've basically ranted on, and I'm not a big fan of doing that much, you know, but at the same time, you know, John Cena deserved my negative rants. He and I've even said it on my article that I wrote. Both of the articles that I wrote about Money in the Bank, one of them being John Cena continuing his streak of main eventing. This continues the streak since February. He's main evented. He's been in the main event of every single pay-per-view match since February. Ridiculous. Yeah. And John Cena, even as we saw on Raw, which was still it made it even more disgusting. John Cena does not need a Money in the Bank briefcase to be in the world title picture. It was a waste of a briefcase. I would have preferred Jericho or Kane to win. Cena would have been my last pick to win, and because he can just cut a promo the next night and be in the title hunt. So it was just ridiculous to me. I was totally, totally not a fan of this at all.
Yeah, do you think the ripping of the, or breaking of the handle was on purpose, or what do you think? Like, was it part of the storyline, or? Because it looked legit,
really,
the way the case was beat up, but.
Yeah. They didn't mention much of it at the next night. There were reports that it was an accident, but Cena was supposed to win. He was booked to win the match, but it was an accident. As we saw, Jericho didn't grab the case. He grabbed the rope when he was teetering with, I believe it was Miz. They both were up on the top of the ladder, and
they were
kind of teetering. Yeah, they were yanking the rope, and they didn't have the briefcase, but John Cena was using the briefcase to hit Show off the ladder, as we saw that he kind of did that at the, you know, in the wrong timing, but I don't think it was purposely done for the briefcase to be botched like that. But regardless of if it was accident on purpose, it was just a terrible ending to the match, and it really didn't do anything for anybody else in the WWE title hunt. It was just ridiculous to me. So,
yeah, it
wasn't a big fan of it.
It was probably written up, that happening by accident probably was a little better than the ending they may have written up anyway. So, and then, I mean, they left themselves open, too, for somebody to say, hey, you won that by accident, let's fight for it at SummerSlam. But of course, we know we'll talk about that when Raw comes. But at this point, this did absolutely nothing for me, like you said, because I knew at that point there was no way for any hashtag shock value, you know, for somebody to cash in the Money in a Bank. So I'm like, geez, this is lackluster. So
yeah,
that officially capped off my thinking, and that the pay-per-view was awful, which, yeah, it was. I got so upset that I was just like, man, I hope Cena, at this point, I was like, yeah, I hope he cashes it in, wins, and does it as a heel some way. Like, I was that upset at the time, and just, it really upset me how it ended, and him winning it. But my feelings, we'll talk about that more on Raw. I'm actually, after seeing Raw, I was glad he won it. But my only thing here is I would have a new rule for the Money in the Bank, and two rules. One is that there's only one Money in the Bank match for both brands, and we go back to, you can cash it in on the Raw or SmackDown, you know, WWE World Heavyweight, doesn't matter which show you're on, because they do hashtag Super Show every week. So, and then two, no former world champions allowed. So if that means you can only have about six guys in the match, six superstars in the match every year, which you probably have get away with eight, I'm sure, but no former superstars allowed. Or not former superstars, former world champions.
Yeah, I think former superstars would probably be funner, more fun than former world champions at this time. So all the people who came back for the, you know, for the 1,000th Raw, you know, they'd be in a Money in the Bank match. That may be more intriguing than what we saw. So
be like the Rumble, a guest spot.
Yeah, exactly. So we'll see. We'll see where it goes. I, you know, Money in the Bank is one of my most anticipated pay-per-views out of the year since 2010, and this to me was definitely the worst one out of the three. So.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So we go to Raw. If you have any thoughts, like I said, the number is 347-884-8452. Feel free to call in. 347-884-8452. WWE Raw starts off with the CM Punk in-ring promo, interrupted by the Big Show. Decent exchange between the two. And I was one thing that I wanted to say about this is I was thinking about if Big Show would have won the Money in the Bank, which I actually wouldn't have been opposed to, you know, compared to John Cena, I think it would have been, because to me, Big Show wins the case, still involved in the title run. I wasn't a big fan, I mentioned before, not a big fan of Show and Punk on just a regular build, but I did mention the previous show, if Show would win the case, I could see that being okay. And if Big Show would have won the case, still been involved in the feud, John Cena still could have cut a promo and fought Punk for the 1,000th Raw. You know what I mean? So it still didn't make sense to me for Cena to win. But it was a decent exchange between Punk and Show. But it still leaves me wondering what... I mean, is Show making Cena embrace the hate since Kane, you know, did it unsuccessfully the end of last year, the beginning of this year? He's kind of bribing him on to kind of lean more towards the dark side, no pun intended, to The Undertaker. But, you know, it was a decent way to start the show.
Yeah, good verbal jabs back and forth, like you said. Mic chemistry here, and then when we talk about their match, I'll talk about that more. So maybe I wouldn't be too opposed to CM Punk and Show. Maybe not so much for the title, but, yeah. But, I mean, we've seen that before when he was straight edge or had the straight edge society.
Yep.
Time I believe it'd be a little better. It'd be a reverse on the heel and face. So that's always different.
Yep. I believe he had the mask at that time as well. So CM Punk in the black mask. That was pretty interesting. And then we saw Kofi and R-Truth defeat Primetime Players. Now, this is where they use their tag team title. They cast in the tag team title shot in. And, you know, stuff like this can definitely make me understand your viewpoint towards the Primetime Players. It's just that, you know, kind of like before R-Truth turned heel in 2010, I believe it was. I was hanging on by a thread, and eventually I just thought it was awful. You know, him keeping the redundant "What's up?" you know, rapping on the way to the ring. I was just trying to hold on, and I just let go because it was awful. What really did it for me is when Eve started coming down with him, and they changed the music, and then Eve was just some type of Laker girl or something like that. It was ridiculous to me, and that really did it for me. And when he turned heel, I liked him again, and I like him still, you know, as a face, the whole little Jimmy thing. And kind of like that with the Primetime Players. I like them a lot, but at the same time, they're just fading away as far as my stock is concerned.
Yeah, you consider them faded for me, man. It's they went out in a blaze of glory, I guess. But yeah, just a letdown, man. It's over for me. I mean, they cashed their almost said money in the bank. They cash in their title shot opportunity on the Raw after the pay per view. Like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's like a money in the bank person saying, "Hey, yeah, let's go for the IC title this time. I don't want to go for world heavyweight status." So I don't know. Just another fail, man. It's prime time players. They'll be back on NXT. Aren't they starting a new season soon? So
yeah, they started. They're doing the tapings at Full Sail University now, and
that's going to come on.
Yeah. I think it's exclusive.
That's wow. That term right there.
Yeah, definitely. I think I don't remember what the station is at Full Sail in Florida, I believe it is. But they're exclusive to that station, so NXT won't be aired nationally anymore. But of course, I'm sure there's YouTubes and things like that. But they're making a lot of changes as far as it's concerned. From what I've seen, the set and just the action, you know, is pretty good. And they're even considering having an NXT championship. So. Kind of a resurgence with the NXT, and I think although it won't be nationally aired, I think that the primetime players, like you said, it seems like that may be a better a better opportunity for them to
send them back down to Florida.
Yeah, yep. I as much as it hurts me to say to agree with that, I might have to pull the plug on primetime players here soon. I'm trying my best to hold on, but I'm not. I think I'm losing stock more than gaining by just holding on. So I might have to choose wisely and let go. So then we saw an AJ and Daniel Bryan's backstage segment. Eve interrupts and says she gets to pick a partner to face the two. Just bad acting by Eve again. Eve, I don't know what it is about Eve that just disgusts me so much. But, I mean, I honestly would not, you know, and of course from everybody, I don't want anybody to be unemployed, you know, but and I'm not maliciously saying, you know, not have a job, but it would be okay, you know, for Eve to, you know, stay backstage, work in the offices or something like that. Because on air, she's just horrendous to me. And I'm so glad that her push has been they've kind of pulled back on it, kind of rescinded. And I think that's a good idea because they tried and tried, but Eve just doesn't get over.
Not at all. Should have just kept her as an analyst, you know, or interviewing backstage where she started, man, because it's not happening. Even when she was faced as a wrestler or a superstar diva, it wasn't working.
Yeah, I agree. Especially with the faster music, like we mentioned, with her and Layla, but Layla still, her music changed, but it's still recycled again. We'll talk about that with the flavor of the week coming next week. I guess I'll do a little plug on it. Recycled themes is the flavor of the week next week. And the theme that Layla is using now is from Tiffany from ECW. So she is just the queen of recycled themes, it seems like. And so I'm not too interested. Speaking of not too interested, Alberto Del Rio, he defeats Zack Ryder. But a little interest comes up. There was, like I mentioned in last week's show, there were reports of Rey Mysterio coming back this week, and he indeed returned. Post-match in 619's Alberto Del Rio. I wonder why they did this, because the return wasn't, it didn't really spark my interest more than, you know, if he would have returned last week. So I wonder if they had him return a week earlier to set them up for the 1,000th Raw, because, like they said, it's 3 hours. They want to treat like a pay-per-view type of thing. So maybe, you know, maybe since the Money Bank didn't have much stock in it as far as the matches is concerned, maybe we can, maybe it can be a tone next week on the 1,000th Raw. So we'll see if that actually happens.
Yeah, I've never been a fan of Mysterio, but when he ran out last night, I still wasn't a fan. That's right. Lifelong feud with Rey Mysterio. It will never be over between me and him. I don't know why. I just, you know, I was a company man. I was WWE to the heart. I wasn't really WCW, so maybe that's why. I didn't watch him in WCW, but never been a fan, and I'm still not. And if they're going to feud him and Del Rio at SummerSlam, that is, oh, that's going to be let's go get a hot dog, bathroom break type of match.
Was it 02 or 03 when he debuted in the WWE?
I want to say it was 2000. SummerSlam was 2002.
Okay.
It was one of the two, though.
Was it Angle? Angle he debuted on?
Yeah.
Okay.
And that was my guy then, and oh, yeah, never. It'll never be over between me and Ray.
Yeah, and it was tough for me, too, man, because I was a big Rey Mysterio fan in WCW, because I avidly followed WCW, and I liked him a lot. He was just a giant killer. He defeated Kevin Nash and Bam Bam Bigelow and consecutive Nitros, I believe. And but when he came in, it was a different deal. So you know, I wasn't necessarily a fan. When he came back, I mean, when he came to the WWE, and so unfortunately, it's still kind of like that for me, just redundant, just bland. Yeah, I just don't see much in Rey Mysterio, and I don't, you know, it's about time for him to give it up. He debuted July 25th of 2002 in an episode of SmackDown against Chavo Guerrero. And he immediately began the feud with Angle, and he went against Angle in SummerSlam of 2002. So you were correct about that. Then we saw Heath Slater, one-man band, calls out someone else. Rikishi comes out. Actually, this is one of my favorite segments of the night. I liked it a lot. I don't know, man. I might end up eating my fist on this after all of this happens. But I'm a Slater fan. I've seen the light, man. I like Slater. I didn't like him during NXT. I didn't like him during Nexus. I didn't like him during Core. I just wasn't a fan at all. But and even when he started the whole one-man band thing, when him and Justin Gabriel broke up, as far as just a solo heel, I still didn't like him. But I like what they're doing with him. I kind of made mention before the past few weeks, I like what they're doing. But I'm a fan, and I actually, you know, there's a part of me, man, that wishes he feuds with Santino, because they're both kind of comic reliefs. But I would actually say that Heath Slater, man, would be a better champion right now than Santino. And I actually would be okay with him being the U.S. champion. And good to see Rikishi back. Definitely a fan of the post-match dance between him and the Usos. Of course, you know, it would have been interesting to see Too Cool there, but it's cool. Scotty Too Hotty actually came back as one of the legends on an episode of NXT last week. So it was good to see him too. And you can actually YouTube those who are listening. You can YouTube it. Scotty Too Hotty returns on NXT or something like that. You'll be able to see it. So you know, but at the same time, you know, it's good to see him and his boys dance. You know, I guess it pulls the heartstrings a little bit more from those three in the ring, and they all three of them can actually dance pretty well as opposed to Too Cool. So I liked it. It was good. The whole hat thing and the snake thing, and it was a good moment to really look at.
Oh yeah, this definitely saves the whole 48 hours from Money in the Bank to the end. For me, like, that was probably one of the brightest spots out of the past two shows. Made me go nuts. At first I thought they should have saved it for the 1,000th episode, but then I kind of got to thinking they got to do a little more, get a little more time by doing it on this, and I guess they were saving their best comeback legend for last, so to speak. For all the people who went against Heath Slater, I definitely appreciate Rikishi the most, and that's taken away from, or not taken away from, Vader or Sid or Backlund, any DDP. It's just Rikishi, man. I got a soft spot for that guy, and you know I'm a big Uso fan, so it was just great. And then that Too Cool music, man. No matter what, man, that's something that'll never get old. Think about some silly times to that music, because they had that music for a long time.
Yeah.
This is great. Yeah,
it was. And interesting how that first started off when he was kind of like protecting them, and he would just kind of be kind of a bully and just kind of walk out, and you know they would hand him the glasses, and the glasses would kind of Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of thing. So
yeah,
you're right, man. It was definitely good to see that. Daniel Bryan and AJ defeats Miz and Eve. This was pretty interesting as well. I don't know if this is leading to a potential Daniel Bryan face turn. He proposes to AJ. She accepts, and they both start chanting yes. The crowd was chanting no for a long time, and they kind of heard a little bit more yes chants when they both started doing it together. You know, what it seems like to me, since the whole wedding is next week, they announced, it seems to me that AJ is going to be a full-fledged heel and side with whoever crashes the wedding.
Yeah. Another WWE wedding. So I'm definitely excited for that, man. That's no wedding has went without something big happening, usually. Miz and Eve. Now, I don't know. I know it was just a one-time thing. Maybe it wasn't, but they seemed buddied up or whatnot. I don't know if putting them two together would hurt Miz or help Eve. Do you have any thoughts on that? Would you be opposed to that, or what do you think? I mean, because they both need something. So, I'm not sure.
Yeah. My thing is, why not? You know, I both of them to me are just waste of airtime, unfortunately. And it's for the Miz, unfortunately, not so much for Eve. But I would say that I think that it wouldn't hurt, you know, the whole trying it out wouldn't hurt, as opposed to having nothing to do with either one of them. And I think that Eve would maybe bring, because, you know, Eve is just, she's a bona fide heel now, and Miz, you know, still gets some very faint face pops, and I think that if anything, Eve may help Miz, you know, just solidify himself as a heel if they're still trying to do that with him, which I don't see him, you know, with the whole comeback and things like that. I don't see them, you know, doing that as far as making him a face anytime soon. So Eve will help out with solidifying him as a heel. So I think it may work.
Yeah, like I said, couldn't hurt. I think they should try it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then we saw Ryback and Jack Swagger. The match never started. Swagger gets some offense, and then Ryback gets an upper hand, the upper hand. I actually like this. I actually liked what they did with it. I'm a fan. It seems like I said, even with the Hawkins and Wreck thing, it seems like they're doing something with Swagger, and he didn't get squashed. He actually had some offense, and the match never started. So I'd be okay with this building up until SummerSlam.
Yeah, definitely. Me too, because I get what they were trying to do last night with the vulnerability of Ryback and then coming back from a beatdown to, you know, he was the one, not so much, well, victorious, so to speak, even though it was, like I said, no contest. But, yeah, give Swagger something to do, and these are both big guys. I'd be okay with this. It's better than nothing for Swagger.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Any type of SummerSlam build for him is an achievement. So, then we saw a Dolph Ziggler interview interrupted by Chris Jericho. Dolph Ziggler starts talking about Jericho, you know, saying that he thinks he's losing his touch, and eventually gets a code breaker. Now, this was by far the best moment of the whole weekend to me. It seems like we may get, and for those who don't know, Ryan and I went to the same college for a short period of time, and even then I had a campaign called the TJF campaign, the Turn Jericho Face campaign, and this is a time when he was a heel for a second, when he was, you know, he kind of started off as a heel and turned face and then went heel again, and I kind of felt like he was ready for him to turn face again. I believe this was 2003, if I'm not mistaken. Him and Christian was feuding late 2002, early 2003. Him and Christian was feuding, and you know, they actually had culminated a match at WrestleMania 20, if I'm not mistaken, or is it 21? 20 or 20? I think it was 20 when they fought. But the Turn Jericho Face campaign was successful at that time, and started another one, and it seems like after all these years, because he hasn't been a bona fide face in quite some time since he debuted, he came back in 07 and was actually a face only for a few months, only had really one big feud, and that was against JBL. We kind of saw it yesterday. He comes out just randomly on Ziggler. And what I'm hoping is that this will actually lead to a briefcase match, because Ziggler kept saying he's losing his touch, and hey, we might see a briefcase, we might see an RVD and Shelton Benjamin style match for the Money in the Bank briefcase between Ziggler and Jericho at SummerSlam, and I would 1,000,000,000% be an advocate of that.
Oh heck yeah! I loved it. This was awesome. SummerSlam will be better with these two feuding. If these two have a SummerSlam match, which don't be stupid, WWE, give us what we want, this will be the best match, and Alberto Del Rio and Rey Mysterio will be the worst match. Simple as that.
I don't know if they do a random Brodus Clay match. might be up there, especially if he goes against JTG again, as we saw today, as we saw on Raw. That was the next match, and that was just awful to me. Just JTG, his whole look, it's like he's had this look for a little while, but he hardly ever appears on TV, but... Yeah, it was just a flat match, and it's sad because Brodus Clay, he gets pops coming in and going out, but during his match, it's really flat, just like Ryback.
Yeah, I don't even know what to say about. I've got nothing, man. It was nothing.
Yeah,
absolutely
pretty much
nothing.
Nothing says everything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
bathroom break, I guess.
yeah, the dreaded bathroom break. So, finally, we saw CM Punk defeat Big Show by DQ. Little bit of a post-match beatdown by Big Show. And then Cena comes out, and Big Show kind of tries to egg Cena on to cash it in that night, and then he announced that he'll cash it in at the 1000th Raw episode. I didn't like this at all. I don't know. It just seems like Cena is just so predictable to me, and it's disgusting. I mean, I knew he wasn't going to cash it in. The hustle, loyalty, respect, I knew all that, and Big Show grabbing the mic and trying to egg him on, and I just knew he wasn't going to cash it in. It was ridiculous to me. Couldn't stand it. Like I said before, they could have even done a triple threat match for the 1000th Raw episode, and between Show, Punk, and Cena. I mean, somebody else could have won the match, the Money in Bank, Jericho or Kane. Even with Jericho being in a feud with Ziggler and Show and Cena still being in a feud with Punk, hey, why not have Kane win? He wasn't even on Raw yesterday. So you could have had Kane win the briefcase and just kind of be under the radar for a while and cash it in and have a short WWE championship run. I mean, why not? You know what I mean? But what I'm saying is, like I've been saying, is that John Cena did not need the briefcase to be involved in this whole thing and to announce a championship match against Punk on the 1000th Raw.
I see. This is the part where I differ because I felt like it would have been nice. He's got the briefcase. It would have been nice to see him come out cashing in and win and just kind of really beat the crap out of Punk, and then we just think, not know what's going on here, like. Has he snapped? Is he a heel? But there's no point in talking about that because we know that's never going to happen. But anyways, for this actual match, though, between Punk and Show, the match was actually really good. I was really into it. Like, I knew since it wasn't a title match, I'm like, who the heck is going to win here? And, it wasn't predictable, so... Yeah, they actually did a really good job for a Raw match that started at, 11:55, 11:53, so that was pretty cool.
Eastern time at 10:53, yeah.
Yeah. But as for him saying he wanted the match next week on Raw 1000, I didn't see that coming. I'll take that over him saying he wanted it at SummerSlam. Oh, I will take that any day over him saying, I was like, man, if he says SummerSlam, that's going to be just awful. He went in for the Raw 1000, big match, and the unpredictability because we don't know. I mean, it's clearly possible that Cena can win on this Raw, and it's, we don't know if they'll keep it on Punk to have him really go over Cena or what, but smart money would go with Cena. Since it's the 1000th episode, it's Cena. And I was watching an old broadcast of a Raw the other day, and I seen somebody in the crowd with the sign that said, "Yawn, Cena." So that right there kind of sums it up. But he's my guy, and I'll be rooting for him next week. I'll be Team Cena will be in full effect. Yeah. But
green
it's
and all.
Either one can win, so yeah, we don't know what will happen.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like I said, I'm not too opposed to the build for the 1,000th Raw. That wasn't my problem. The problem is that
waiting.
He just didn't need the briefcase for it. You know, the build's not that bad. You know what I mean? I'm okay. I can ration with the build. 1,000th Raw, Cena and Punk. Okay, I get it. But you didn't need the case for that, though. I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, if you want to make any type of relevance to the Money in the Bank briefcase, just throwing it on John Cena, which literally that's what they did. Just threw it on John Cena. It was just ridiculous and irrelevant to me, and just it was just a waste of time. Which I just don't agree with. So. Real quick, what happens SummerSlam? Rock is supposed to be there. There's some rumors that he may compete at SummerSlam. So do you see because you know he's chasing the WWE Championship. You know his little announcement about that. So do you see a Cena Rock 2 match at SummerSlam for the title, or do you see a Punk Rock match at SummerSlam?
I hate to say it, but I don't want to see either. I would rather see a triple threat. But if I had to choose, I would want to see Punk and Rock. No, I wouldn't want to see Cena Rock too. So, I mean, Punk's been this champion for so long, then you got this, you know, future Hall of Famer coming in and saying he, you know, knocked the ring rust off and he still got it. And I'd rather see Punk and Rock, but popular consensus, everybody would want to see Cena and Rock too. But a triple threat would not hurt at all.
It wouldn't. I would favor a triple threat, although I don't see them booking that, but I would favor a triple threat. Why not? I mean, show is just kind of floating around. It's SummerSlam, you know, why not make it a fatal four-way, you know, even do that, so... You know, that could be possible. I mean, Rock doesn't have to be the most competitive. You know, he could tone down his competitiveness, you know what I mean, because he would be rusty, so he didn't have to the expectation wouldn't be there if there's three other people, you know, in the match. So just something to think about. We'll see after the 1,000th Raw comes up. I can definitely see The Rock being involved in the world or the WWE title picture come SummerSlam. So then we'll go real quick to SmackDown. We may be able to get a call in. 347-884-8452 is the number. And Zack Ryder in-ring promo interrupted by Alberto Del Rio. Ryder brings out Sin Cara. Zack Ryder was the GM for the night. Alberto Del Rio defeats Sin Cara. Zack Ryder books Show versus Kali. Edge retires with a 1,000th Raw moment. Zack Ryder books Sheamus and Y2J. Ziggler and Rose defeats Santino and Christian. Show defeats Kali, which was really interesting. Ryback defeats Tyler Rex. Sandow defeats Justin Gabriel. And then finally, Sheamus defeats Chris Jericho. Definitely one of the best matches of Chris Jericho of the year. I mean, you know, his Punk matches was good, of course. But I think as far as just a good, solid match, this match was against Sheamus was definitely up there. Jericho even tweeted about it, about how good the match was. Post the match, of course. And two things. Tyler Rex actually officially gave Ryback, as far as solo matches, he gave Ryback the most offense. And then lastly, the Alberto Del Rio and Sin Cara. I mean, we might see Sin Cara and Rey Mysterio. Well, they were thinking about doing that this year, but you may see it last year. But honestly, I actually wouldn't be a big I wouldn't be opposed to Alberto Del Rio and Sin Cara at WrestleMania 29.
Oh, no, not at all. But like you said, Jericho and Sheamus, that was awesome. Tore the house down.
Sure did. And then Impact Wrestling, about 10 minutes here. Impact Wrestling, Bully Ray defeats Joseph Park. Park snaps and Black Hole slams Bully Ray. RVD defeated Samoa Joe, Bound for Glory series match. Christopher Daniels, a Kazarian in-ring segment. Claire comes out. AJ comes out. And then Claire reveals to that AJ is the father. I feel like I was watching some more Prophet show or something like that. Zema Ion defeats Dakota Darso. We see Austin Aries in-ring promo interrupted by Bobby Roode. Says it was a fluke. Very, very good acting and good mic work by Bobby Roode. Hulk Hogan, yep. Sting, D-Von, Gary Bischoff backstage segment. Miss Tessmacher defeats Gail Kim. She's really grown on me, Tessmacher. She's really made some leaps and bounds. Kurt Angle defeats Mr. Anderson in the Bound for Glory match, which is really good. Hogan and Roode backstage segment. Roode and Aries, they come to a conclusion of Roode and Aries being a non-title match in Open Fight Night, which is this week. And then TNA title rematch at Hardcore Justice. Sting's in the ring and calls for Hogan, but he doesn't come out. And then eventually they showed him being attacked backstage by the Aces and Eights faction. And then eventually Sting goes up, walks up the ramp, and then he's attacked by them. I like the Aces and Eights thing. I like suspicion. I like suspenseful angles, and they're in the mask, and you know, it makes me wonder what there are. You know, who is underneath the mask? So it's a good thing. I like it. Just good solid program by TNA. I mean, I like Impact Wrestling. I'm a fan of them. This is by far been the best year of Impact Wrestling to me. Even Bully Ray and Joseph Park was a good match, and I was a big fan of the program as a whole. So good job to TNA.
Yeah, only four things stood out to me here, and I was a Bully Ray and Joseph Park as time for that to kind of come to a head. Roode and Aries, like I said, great acting. Got me going. Can't wait for that rematch. And then Miss Tessmacher, yeah, she's grown on me too. Good job retaining her title, because I don't know if she ever even had a match when she was in WWE. I only remember her Kelly's expose. Right. And then hopefully the masked men aren't let down when that storyline comes to play or whatever.
I agree very much. All the way to this week was just a recap of the Best in the World pay-per-view. They showed some highlights of couple matches, and they showed full matches of Finlay against Michael Elgin, and then the triple threat match between the for the TV title between Roderick Strong, Jay Lethal, and Tommaso Ciampa. Both of the full matches that they showed was really, really good. And then they showed the Kevin Steen crazy promo that he cut that we mentioned right after the show, right after the Best in the World pay-per-view. So good little recap episode by ROH, but it does make me wonder, like, you know, can we just wait a few weeks? You know, is that really a good thing? Because, you know, $15 for the pay-per-view, and we can see full matches on TV, you know, weeks later. So I wonder if that really is a good thing after all.
Yeah. Only thing here, Jay Lethal needs to win me back over. I'm losing steam on him.
I don't know why.
Need to win me back over. And then Steen's promo was epic, of course. That was awesome.
Yeah, well, definitely. Yeah. Sure was. Got about 5 minutes left. Flavor of the week. Raw Moments.
Yeah, we have a little more time here, but we kind of got after it a little bit, so just wanted to talk about that. And you know, we there's more moments in Raw's history that, you know, we forget than we'd ever remember. Still to this day, even when they were showing the Raw 1000s, which I really think they should have done that like way more in advance than what they did, because those segments, man, they have taken me back and been awesome. So, but speeding up on time here, I just had a couple things, just spitballing off the top of my head here. I had like Undertaker when he drug Hogan on his motorcycle. That was a Raw. The first ever draft with Vince and Ric Flair, that was hilarious. Them two going back and forth. Big Show choke slamming Undertaker through the ring back when Show was young and fit and in shape. And also thought of when the sirens would go off when the WCW invasion first started happening. That was pretty crazy. I can't remember who it was on, but I remember Hugh Morris coming out and doing a moonsault. I want to say it was on Edge. I think that was one of the first ones I seen, and that was, like, insane to me. Sable, her and Mark Mero, when he had her in the potato sack, that was just another thing that came to mind. Big Boss Man, when he had Al Snow eat the dog Pepper, and Al Snow eating this steak, and he asked him if he needs to put some pepper on it, and he's like, oh, you know, want some extra pepper, and it was actually Pepper the dog he was eating, so that was funny. Evolution turning on Randy Orton, that was one of the things to me that was a downfall of that group, which is to me one of the greatest groups of the 2000s, if not the greatest. And then, like I said, we'd have a Cena appearance. My number one, I guess, would be not in my heart, but just for what it meant, is Cena getting drafted to Raw back in 05, because that kind of, you know, he was already a superstar, but that put him over more, changed his career more, and we definitely needed Cena on Raw, as much as some people would hate to admit it. We definitely need him. And then real quick, last thing, my Mr. Monday Night Raw would have to be, the MVP would have to be Stone Cold Steve Austin. He definitely has the most Raw memories out of any superstar I can think of. I mean, you got the Zamboni, the stunning McMahon for the first time, stunning all the McMahons, the Bang 316, the he's got a gun skit with Brian Pillman. Trying to think of more, but he's got him filling up Vince's car with concrete. So there's more.
Did you mention the Zamboni with Angle?
Oh yeah, yeah, the milk truck and then the beer truck as well. So yeah, he's definitely Mr. Monday Night, man. You got to give him that.
Yeah. I got a few here. Radicals debut. All the Kane returns, including this previous one late last year. Of course, the Nexus debuting. That was one of the most unpredictable parts of Raw, and just really left people just kind of cliffhanging to the next week. And interestingly enough, Daniel Bryan got fired after he choked Justin Roberts with his tie, I believe. And so that was good. And then another thing is when the Nexus defeated Team WWE clean on a right after SummerSlam, after their big tag match at SummerSlam, they beat them clean. Wade Barrett stood tall, and I believe him and Orton was the last two people in, and the Nexus really had us going for a while. It seemed like it was going to be a little longer than we saw it really kind of pan out to be. And then the Triple H walkout. That was a nice little recent Raw moment. That was good. I agree. I think it should have run longer. The following week, I believe it was just Cena, Punk, and Sheamus started off the following Raw, and they were really kind of the only people there. And eventually, it was a couple more people, and then they started coming in. And could have been drug out a little bit more. And then, of course, my favorite, my two favorites, one being when Y2J defeated Triple H for the WWE title. Mm. And then, of course, it was revoked at the further down the further in the show, it was revoked. But I'll tell you what, the crowd popped insanely huge. When Jericho won that match, and APA was out there and kind of helped bodyguard him a little bit, and it was just an amazing moment. And then finally, if everybody knows me, from the show, and of course my friends that know me as far as wrestling is concerned, my favorite Raw moment. It's pretty much a no-brainer. August of 1999, Rock's in the ring. All of a sudden, the countdown comes on. Cue music. Turn the lights down, and comes out. He has his arm stretched out. Chris Jericho debuts on Raw in the middle of a Rock interview. And then you can also, also tack in just really, all three of his debuts were on Raw. So the one in 2007 was he cut off Randy Orton this year in January he didn't cut off anybody. It was just a promo and he came out. So just Y2J's debuts, man. I'm a big fan of it. So it'll be interesting to see what the 1,000th Raw episode will bring us. Thank you all for listening. Keep the numbers stored. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of talk next week about the 1,000th Raw. 347-884-8452. Store the number. Call in live next week. We'll be here 11 p.m. Tuesday night, Eastern Time. Follow us at Crave Wrestling. Like us on Facebook at Crave Wrestling. And check out my articles. I'm a featured columnist at the Bleacher Report. Any suggestions, any thoughts, comments, send us an email at cravewrestling@gmail.com. Thank you so much for listening to us, and we will be here next week. Thank you.